6. Warm up my second vehicle today.
This morning I had 18 degrees when I left the house, 21 here at I-85.
7-1, I left the house, and here where the truck's at is 15.
Tonight and maybe tomorrow night too, don't we?
Again, this weekend's supposed to be even colder.
Let's call the firewood place.
We'll definitely try to make that a priority today.
Definitely need to get that going. It was definitely cold in the house this morning. My heat pump can't keep up with 18 degrees. Had the thermostat set at 68. And when I woke up this morning, it was running and 65 in the house. So I definitely understand why the previous owner at some point put this extra wood furnace in there.
Definitely good to have as a backup for sure.
Probably still replace the system. It's probably circa 2000, 2005. A really old Goodman unit, and it's only... I think it's only a 2-ton or maybe even a 1.5-ton unit, which is too small for the house. But, I know why they did that stuff back then. It was just so it would run more and dehumidify better in the summer. But, yeah, I probably need to upsize it to like a 2.5 or 3-ton.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea when you get the opportunity.
Can run at a continuously variable capacity, so it might be a 3-ton unit, but it'll only run at a ton and a half if it needs to, just to maintain temperature, and that'll help it dehumidify. So a lot of these old conventions don't apply anymore, but a new system that runs on an inverter would probably do the trick.
Systems definitely have some advantages, but they also have some disadvantages in that they don't last as long and they're expensive.
Well, some inverter systems, and they don't seem to be that much more expensive. They're certainly a whole lot more efficient. But just a heat pump unit, like a 3-ton heat pump unit with the heat exchanger for inside is about the same price as a traditional unit, from what I've seen.
In my experience, had been more expensive, but I see a lot about these mini splits anymore too, where you have more things to go wrong, but you have more opportunity for things to go right too.
Basically, just a mini split, but instead of wall-mounted heat exchange. I had a mini split in my home office in Seneca, and it was fantastic. And I would love to do something similar for the house. When the time comes and when there's money for it.
KW Mobile.
Good morning, Ken. KO4HKX. Welcome to the group.
How are you, JKT? How you doing this morning?
Yep, doing well over here, guys. Carry on. Trying to get warmed up.
This morning.
It's not going to happen today.
Hold me out for a few minutes. I'm about to run into the Quick Trip here and grab my Coke and my breakfast. W2JKT.
We are out. KO4HKX. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, as I was saying, it's going to be hard to get warmed up today.
I'm in and out, all day long.
Yeah.
Mr. Andrew, KO4HKX.
Good morning, Andrew, KN4TFW.
Yeah, y'all are right. It's 19 degrees here where I'm at.
Dipping right now.
15 over here where I'm at right now.
Pretty good last night.
Thought it was good. Next week, I think, when things are starting to get really interesting.
When we went through all the questions, I knew all the answers to the questions, so that was a good thing.
Videos from the last extra class the week, like this week I'm watching three and reading the book, so trying to pound it in there.
You need to do at lunch, just go ahead and watch the one from last year.
I suck, I still ain't took the plastic off my book.
Preservation method, right?
Dang it. I mean, I downloaded an app, try to do the answers and start looking over those, but I still I didn't open that either. So no matter what I do, the plastic or the nap, I still ain't doing worth the grip.
Later was all set up from the last time I used it.
Greenville Group lets you use the calculator.
And that, I think, is in Dave in part of the Greenville Group. Rules and regulations, so that shouldn't be too bad.
What do you need for the class?
TI-36, isn't it, Ken?
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's a scientific calculator where it helps you do away with a lot of the trick. If you just got to take a 6-week course to learn how to run the calculator.
I remember to send you a link to it on Amazon here. It was less than $20 or somewhere right around there.
It's been a while since I've used a scientific calculator.
It was coming back to me when he was explaining it from the general class that I took.
It's been a few years since I've had anything to do with a scientific calculator, and so it's taken me a minute. Not too bad, but it was good to see old man Ed in there last night.
And he got on about 45 minutes early just to make sure he was on in time. He had problems with his computer last time.
I'll be on in the morning with him.
Mr. Ed.
That's cool that he's in the class as well.
Talking picofarads and microfarads and everything. I'm just not an electronics guy.
I am as well.
Mine too for now, but that's what I'm taking the class for, is I want to learn more about it. I know this is not going to teach me everything, but I definitely want to start learning more about what's how it all works.
That for if you're making antennas and stuff like that?
Your capacitance going to be, but and how you measure capacitance, I guess, is where you're going to come into that, so in resistance, so I guess so.
Feedback.
Hey, make sure not to get anything with any meat in it, right?
Yeah, I was wondering what he got.
Yeah, hook zero.
There's probably not much in there that's vegan.
On meat, sausage patty.
Okay. Most Beyond Meat junk is worse for you than the actual meat.
Yeah, same here.
We talked about that yesterday, Eric.
Resistance and stuff. You guys talk about your class?
Got into how to use the calculator last night and how the units work on picofarads and hertz and all that, how it's to the 10th power.
Basic stuff. I come to think of it, I should send you guys this. I think I could probably do it. But I actually do a class at my office for new engineers, and it's a review of all the things like that, like units and, you know, tracing back the units of all of our common quantities like resistance, capacitance, voltage, tracing those back to basic units, you know, kilogram, meters, seconds, and how they're all related together. And I do a module on how you can pretty much solve any problem by making the units work out. So I'll see if I can get clearance to send that to you guys, and if I can, I will.
Good, Eric, if you can. But, gentlemen, I am going to make me a pit stop this morning. I ran out of the house and left my lunchbox, so I'm going to stop and get me some breakfast this morning.
Use that information in radio, mostly for antennas.
Design, circuit analysis, debugging, whatever.
I just never really got into electronics.
And they talk about using, you know, capacitors or resistors or whatever when you're building stuff like that, but you don't really know why. I wonder if that would be, you'd have a better understanding of it once you get into the class.
Yeah, component, capacitor, resistor, you name it, there are definitely multiple applications, multiple reasons to use them in a circuit. And also, you know, the quantity of the capacitance, you know, capacitance isn't always a physical thing. It can be, you know, a part of impedance. So when we talk about antennas, if your antenna is electrically short, it's going to look capacitive. That means that the impedance is going to have a component in the negative J direction. And then if it's too long, it's going to look inductive and have an impedance component in the positive J direction. So, you know, just a couple of different ways to look at it. You know, there's a physical quantity of capacitance, and then there's how that capacitance plays into things like impedance. So, multiple applications for all of it.
Use all that new knowledge to build you another antenna system. For my system right now, you'd be thinking, how the hell does that work? It actually works. If you break it all out, it's got like a dozen ham sticks on it.
Somebody got a ham antenna on top of their little Ford Escape, Ford Explorer.
I need a little mag mount and a different NMO and put it on top of this thing. Get a little bit better signal anyway.
Just drilling the hole and putting in a roof mounted NMO.
You can do that even on a junker car.
Your truck, but I'm just not willing to pull the trigger.
I was nervous about it when I did my truck, but I do not regret it one bit. You know, the performance of an actual, you know, antenna that's got a good grounding connection at the mounting point, the performance is just amazing.
We're in the parking lot shortly, so I'm going to go ahead and say 7-3. Y'all have a good one. Be safe out there. And tell Patrick I said 7-3 as well when he comes back. Y'all have a good one. KO4 CEF, and I'll be clearing y'all's final.
Boss, take KN4 TFW.
73, Andrew, have a great day. Be safe out there. This is W2 JKT.
73, Andrew, KO4 HKX. Have a great day.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I got McDonald's this morning. Got a sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin.
For healthy eating.
But this is a very rare occasion for me, so figured it won't hurt me too bad.
Buddy.
A smoothie.
Take my parking lot.
Seeing the insides of the windows of my car, I've got some serious fogging up problems.
An article that said something about that on the, that it does it on the newer cars, but I don't remember why it said it did it.
It's like you get a film on any of them, and if you're a smoker, it's even worse.
Said why that was on the newer cars, because it didn't used to do it on the old ones.
Found some chemical in old windshields that might cause cancer in rats like 0.0006% of the time, and so they banned it or something.
Right.
It's fogging up on me because it's just dirty glass, you know, I haven't cleaned it in a while. And, you know, whenever you give the water something to grab onto like that, it'll fog on it. But, I wouldn't be surprised if newer cars had this problem because of some stupid EPA regulation or something.
And she goes, man, they're hard to clean. My arm ain't long enough.
For HKX. And Eric, just so you know, I didn't get a chance to get on JSA call last night because I got in about 20 minutes before the class started, so I was trying to get ready for it.
Well, I think, I don't think those messages expire or anything, so just whenever you get to it.
But if I go do JSA call, then I got to go ahead and set up the parameters on that program also, just like I did on the FT8 one.
Call is based on FT8. I think they've used a lot of the source code, so the menus are pretty much the same.
You guys run on digital. I'm only running like about 15.
I set the rig to 25, and that gives me about 20 watts forward.
Same. I'll start out around 15. If I can got a pretty good propagation, everything is going good, I'll leave it there.
mode's harder on the radio because of the duty cycle?
So, I mean, think how long some people had to keep these PTT mashed down and carry on a conversation.
It was a lot higher, and for me, a good rule of thumb is to keep the power below the AM power output rating on your radio. For example, the PS590 that I have will do 40 watts on AM, so I run usually 40 watts or less, especially if I'm going to be operating digital for a long time. Now, if you have something like FT8 where you have a 50% duty cycle, you know, when you're operating, you can run a little higher because you know you've got that guaranteed 15 seconds of off time while you're receiving. So it's all just like, you know, common sense. You know, if you're running, you know, 100 watts on digital, you're already doing something wrong anyway. But yeah, you shouldn't need more than 25 watts or so, even on a bad day, to run digital.
I hate to burn up a good radio.
No, it won't let you burn it up.
Gentlemen, KO4MUF.
Jody, KO4HKX over here.
Good morning, Jody, KN4TFW.
Morning, Jody, W2JKT.
I hope y'all's enjoying this nice and brisk morning.
Here.
Ken's got to be a little chillier this morning.
It's 11 degrees when I come out this morning at the house.
Calling it 17, the car said 20.
2 degrees here. I'm headed south on 85, just passing 26.
I'm at the 72 now.
Well, switched up to 13 right now, headed south on 178.
Toward the split station. Acknowledging other stations and that, you don't hear any of those other stations. Yeah, he's probably working split.
Partners will work split just for that reason, to kind of try to manage the pilot.
The contesters that work the POTA sites, and man, I don't know how they do it, because I've listened to the pileup, but somehow out of all that pileup, he'll be able to pull out four or five partial calls.
Some of these guys can do, but yeah, I mean, you know, some of the older contesting radios, like my TS950 that I've got, it actually has two receivers in it, so you can go down and receive two simultaneous receivers. So if you're working a contest, you could be transmitting on one and receiving like five kilohertz down or something, you know, for contesting like that.
Confused.
No interest in contesting.
Work a contest just to try to get the contacts or get a distant station.
Never turn in a log.
One in before. Well, the only one I've done was the 13 original colonies during the 4th of July. I did do that and get a certificate.
Though, that's, you know, everybody has the opportunity to get that. It's not like, you know, one, you know, it's not like a point system, but, you know, the only thing I'll do in a contest, if I do work stations in a contest, I'll make sure to work at least a dozen or so, because the way they do contest scoring, like, if your call does not show up in at least, like, 20 other operators' logs, then they'll just throw your contact out, and I don't want to waste their time, so I'll at least work, you know, 10 or 20 stations in a contest just to make sure that they can use it for credit.
Yeah, I usually end up doing that.
Turned up to about 20 degrees over here now on 123, and Old Glory standing at almost full attention over here at the Marvel place, and so it's cold.
Check back down to to 21 here. I'm at exit, coming up on exit 63.
If you're at 80.
15, going down 178 here.
From the pipeline where they're piping all that cold air in.
I'm with it. What's this? I'm going, you ain't going out in it.
The people that love it is the ones that don't have to be out in it for anything other than just something they want to do.
Run back over there to Green Pond and pick up some equipment this morning and move down to a holler, so hopefully it'll get a little better down there, but we'll see.
KF4NXY.
David, KO4HKX.
Morning, David, KN4TFW.
KM4MUF.
Staying, trying to stay warm out there this morning.
Yeah, we're trying.
Heat on in the back of the truck so that it would be at least one place I could hang out while the rest of the truck was warming up.
It's a good idea. Yeah, try and stay warm. Yeah, anyway, I'm going to get back to my cup of coffee. Just want to check in, say good morning to y'all. And I'll be listening. KF4NXY.
Well, you have a good morning. And I hope you have you and Miss Marie have a great day. KF4HK.
Enjoy my cup of coffee while I ride down the road. You enjoy yours. KF4MUF. Have a great day.
KN4TFW.
73W2JKT.
I got a carport that I parked my truck under that. When I go out in the mornings, it's not all iced up.
15 degrees here at work. The gate, guys, so I'm going to say 7-3. Everybody be careful out there, and look forward to catching you later down the log. KN4TFW.
Ken, have a great day. KO4HKX.
Have a great day. Be safe. This is W2JKT. Good talking to you.
Sir, Mr. Ken, you have see you later. 7-3. KO4MQF.
You got on the plan today for work? Is this when you're starting your deep ditch you was talking about you had to put in?
Yes, we got to run grab some equipment and move it over there, but yeah, we should be starting that today. At least it's just an eight-hour day week for us, so, you know, we ain't got to be out there until dark, so we'll be good.
I hope the cab of that machine has got some heat in it.
And it will be on.
And Eric, how's the electric car holding up this morning in this cold temp?
Definitely using up a lot of it to keep the cabin nice and warm. I've got the temperature set to 76 in here. And I'm having to occasionally let in some fresh air to defog and everything, but yeah, it's doing okay. I'm still 60% battery. Started with 90 this morning, so and I've got about 20 miles to go to the office. So pretty typical for a cold morning.
I was just curious how well it was doing. I know they got heaters running through there to heat that warm those sails up, so hopefully it doesn't lose too much efficiency on it.
Everybody says it is. You know, the number one reason that EVs use so much more battery when it's cold is because people run the heat.
The creature comforts is what get most vehicles.
If I weren't running the heat, I would be getting maybe 5 to 10% less range than if the batteries were warmer.
And at the charging time when it's cold like this.
Because at you know, it'll heat up the battery cells before it starts charging. So I think, let's see, this car, if it's below 0C, it will heat up the cell to something like 4C before it starts to charge. Current temperature of my batteries is 5C right now. So they're plenty warm enough to be charged. But yeah, usually if it's super cold, you know, it'll either heat the batteries first or charge at a much lower rate because C, you know, 32 degrees F or so, it can damage them pretty badly.
Wondering how how bad it slowed it down. You know, I know you're not going to be able to do a real fast charge, but if it went to a 50% fast charge instead of 100%.
Car limiting charge to 20 kilowatts when it was cold. And a lot of the times, if you just stop the charge and restart it again, it'll go to full rate because it's warmed up enough. But yeah, this car charges at 55 kilowatts when it's warm, and it'll back it down to 20 kilowatts when it's cold, and then, you know, step it up once the batteries are warm.
Do you keep your car in a garage when you charge it like that, or is it outside to do that type of charge?
I have a 50 amp charger at home, so it'll run 11 kilowatts. And the battery, you know, the battery heater on board is like 2 kilowatts. So if it does get too cold, you know, I leave it plugged in overnight. So if it does get cold, the car will automatically warm up the batteries and keep them warm, you know, using the charger overnight. So I don't have to worry about it.
Sure, there's lots of diesel sitting on the side of the road with frozen fuel tanks and lines right now, too.
Keep anything in them to help keep it out. Yep, you're right.
I'm needing to put the block heater in my truck, but I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Put the block heater on any of mine. So I don't ever have any trouble out of it, other than the only thing you got to worry about is when you're driving down the road, the air moving across the tank, freezing the water in the bottom of it, is the big culprit for most of them. Is what I've seen when I was working on them every day. That was a big deal, is being able to get that water out of there.
Yes, sir.
I have that problem in my truck because I have a fuel sump, so it draws fuel off the bottom of the tank anyway.
See, all modern vehicles pretty much are, but I still see them freeze. What happens is they're allowed to put so much water in diesel by volume, and over time it will accumulate in the bottom of the tank, in the sump, and all of it. It'll make a layer in there if people don't put an additive in there to keep the diesel absorbing it back to get it through. And that's why you have the water fuel separators and fuel filters, is to catch that water through there. That's where I see the problem at, or where I've seen the problem at.
What would be a good additive you would recommend, Patrick, if you would?
Dirty, what I use is Power Service, called Power Service from anybody at Walmart. They have a white bottle and a gray bottle, one's for one for winter and one's for summer, and that's what I did. And to help defeat that, that's why most of these trucks have a heater in the fuel bowl to help with the gel and air going into the engine, and it also returns it warm fuel to the tank to keep it circulating as you're driving down the road. But I have seen them freeze even with that.
The other thumbs up for Power Service, Diesel Clean is what I use in mine, but yeah, they also have a winter formulation, and they also have an algicide that you can put in there. So, you know, my truck sits most of the time, so I dumped a bottle of the algicide in there to keep the algae from growing in there. But yeah, it's Power Service is good stuff.
I use that Dextron. Might use a Dextron diesel additive in my fuel.
Good stuff too. Just not as readily available. It's got the FT, I believe it's FT4. Additive in it, which helps with lubrication and a couple other things. So it's really good stuff too. Like I said, it's just not quite as easy to find.
I usually order 2 bottles, maybe 3 bottles offline when I do it. Keep a couple on my shelf for down the road.
Funny that they could put add water. I think it's 10% to diesel by volume, and then here we are trying to take it back out, but we're paying for it anyway. Days like this, I always knew that's what I was walking into when I went into the dealership, was frozen fuel lines and tanks and dead batteries where they've been cranking on it thinking it was going to do something.
You know, hell, if I keep turning it over, it'll crank eventually. you know, my fuel service light come on in this truck one time, and I went in there and drained the filter, and I bet I didn't hardly get a drop out, a good drop, and it brought that service light on.
Yeah, my truck's got a water separator in the first fuel filter, and I've never had it tell me that I needed to drain it, so I don't know that I've ever seen any water, but ever since I put the aftermarket tank in with the sump, it probably just circulates it through all the time and keeps it from building up.
Definitely helps KO4HX Friday, but like I said, even like my excursion, it has a sump down in there, and then the trucks, they have a sump and a baffle all the way around it where it's trying to pull fuel from this one location. Like when you're going up a hill or down the hill, it's got a sump in there so that it maintains a certain amount so you can get up the hill or down the hill, whichever, and that way you don't run out on those transitions. But I still see them freeze. trying to take them out, and I've had to take in so much as drop the tanks and drain them out that way, because it's a mess when it gets so bad. And if the water and the fuel light comes on, it's too late. I've never seen one of those that actually worked like it needs to.
It was weird the way mine did, you know, and it was when I was moving up here, so I was getting all that fuel from different truck stops and stuff like that, and it hasn't happened since.
Hey, Pathfinder, and my ex-wife, when we were married, we drove out to Omaha one Christmas, and I had the fuel tank freeze in that thing, parked out in their driveway. We actually had to use their Jeep to push it into the garage, and then, turn on the garage heater to get the thing to warm up. And then I had to add a bunch of dry gas to the tank to absorb all that water back. But that ethanol fuel is hydrophilic, so it'll absorb water from anything. And, over time, the water content in your fuel tank just keeps on going up until it finally just decides to separate. And then you get a pool of water at the bottom of your fuel tank. So it can definitely cause some problems.
And another one people don't think about is when you're sitting there, the fuel tank, as the temperature changes, it's condensating on the inside of it, and from the air, moisture in the air, and it will do it that way. When you're sitting around with empty fuel tanks, like most people are, they don't stop till they're just a quarter of a tank, and then I'll put $5-$10 in it, and they go on.
Yeah, my truck's sitting at home with less than a quarter tank in it.
Some people that I try to be ready to go or do or anything at any time, any place. So when I know I'm going to leave something set for a while, I try to fill that thing slap up with fuel.
To practice, but most people don't want to do that because they don't want to tie up the money in it. Because at today's prices, that could get real pricey on some of these fuel tanks. I mean, like my excursion, it's got a 50-gallon tank under the back of it. That's a lot of fuel just to sit there.
57 on this one, so, I agree with you, it is, but in the long run, to me, it's better because you don't run into the problems going down the road.
50 gallon in it as well, and it's expensive to have 50 gallons of diesel sitting there.
Yes, but it's definitely better for it even with a gas vehicle, it's better to have that full fuel tank so you don't get that moisture in there if you don't let it sit for a little while. If you're going to let it sit for 30 years, ain't nothing going to fix it.
There's not.
That's it for 30 years. Got to drain everything out of it and fill the cylinders with oil so they don't rust. But yeah, that's a completely different problem.
I'm fixing to pull into my destination, so thank you for the ride in. Thank you for the chat. I appreciate it, and I will talk to y'all later down the line, man. Y'all have a great day in 7-3s from KF4MUF. I'll be clear on your final.
Hey, Jody, and hope you have a great day, and try to stay warm and safe out there, KO4HKX.
Have a great day there in Paramondary Road. Enjoy my old office. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon, W2JKT. Yeah. gallon tank in your excursion, is that OEM or did you put that in?
OEM. It's got an aft axle, they call it, and it's right between the frames. That's pretty standard. Even on like the 450s and 550s with the big tank in the back of it, it's the same one.
Aftermarket. And, you know, when I installed the fuel sump went in, like, right below where the pickup used to be, because it used to have a draw straw in the stock tank. So when that assembly goes back in, it fits, like, right on top of where the sump is. And the sump actually pushes up on the basket a little bit, so the effect of that is that I get, the needle goes to empty when I still have like 14 gallons left in the tank. So I've been trying to figure out a way to fix that, but I haven't come up with anything yet.
You have one of the fuel level sensors that has a metal arm on it, on the fuel module itself. Make sure it's lined up with the slot in the sump for it to go out, and then you may have to bend it down to do that. In order for it to reach zero. It's something you'll have to kind of play with a little bit. If you could do it in the tank where you can kind of feel it hit the bottom, it's sometimes it's tough in there because I realize you're trying to work through that little bitty hole. You'll have to pull it out multiple times and see if it's hitting the bottom.
Yeah, it's got a float that's on this piece of twisted metal, like a spiral piece of metal. So as the float goes up and down, that metal turns. But you know, the problem is that the zero position on that piece of metal has been lifted up a little bit because the sump, you know, that whole basket sits on a spring assembly. And then, you know, what it's designed to do is hit the bottom of the tank and then compress the spring a little bit. But the bottom of the tank is now like a quarter of an inch higher because the sump is there. And it keeps the basket from going all the way down to the bottom of the tank. So it can still get to zero, but the zero position has been lifted up a little bit, maybe quarter, half an inch. And so at that point, you know, there's 14 gallons left in the tank or so. So I need to figure out a way to either move that thing somewhere where it can reach the bottom or add, like, a secondary fuel sensor that can actually pick up, you know, the actual level of the tank.
Okay, that's a different style fuel level sensor than what I was telling you about. But what you can do is it works off resistance. You can put a resistor in line that will change that also. And there again, it'll be something you have to play with. What I would recommend is putting a variable potentiometer or variable resistor in there, finding out what resistor gets it to where you want it, and then just hardwire one in.
Giving me an offset, but the needle would still stop moving when that float reaches the bottom, so I still wouldn't have any knowledge of that last 14 gallons. But I think what I might have to do is get one of these optical sensors. You just have to drill a hole in the tank and put this sensor in, and it sticks up like 2-3 inches, and it can tell you how far up that sensor the liquid is, and that would at least give me a distance indication. I'm not sure how I would convert that to gallons, but at least that would tell me, like, I've got a quarter of an inch or a half an inch or whatever left in the bottom of the tank.
What I was saying with the resistor, it will move zero on is what it's doing. They typically run from zero ohms up to 160, and it depends on the vehicle which way they read that as full or empty. So you have to figure that out. But you're moving zero is what you're doing when you add resistance to it. The only problem I could foresee with that is it might come when you go to full. It might not show completely full. That's still going to be the issue. Then that may just be something you have to live with, is knowing that you have that last 14 gallons as a reserve. Just like on a four-wheeler, when you flip that switch to reserve, there's no way of knowing exactly how much you got left.
W2JKT Friday. Yeah, I'll look at a couple different things, but it's just the biggest problem is that there's no sensing below that bottom level, and so nothing will move. So, I mean, I could move the zero point up to, you know, an eighth of a tank or whatever 14 gallons comes out to, a third of a tank. But then, you know, when that float stops moving down, the needle will just sit there at, you know, a third of a tank or a quarter of a tank and not go down any further because the float stops moving. So I think he, whoa, holy smokes, this guy's going 100 miles an hour. This guy just flew by me so fast it actually pushed my car a little bit. That was crazy.
There's idiots born every day. It seems like more of them sometimes. Just be careful out there.
Even in and out, what I'm worried about is he's going to cause an accident between here and my office, and I won't get there.
The light's coming behind him.
Been a cop. It was a Dodge Charger. I didn't see if it had any labels on it because, you know, they're trying to make those, you know, the law says that they have to use a marked vehicle for traffic patrol, but they don't say that the markings have to be visible all the time. So a lot of these agencies are starting to use, like, black cars with dark gray, you know, decals on them. So I don't know if it was an officer or not, but it was definitely a black Dodge Charger, and it was flying.
He's doing that. He should be running his lights and sirens. He shouldn't be out there, especially this time of day when you can't see. And yes, I know what you're talking about with they call them ghost vehicles, where they're trying to at least amount of notice that they can.
What about that is they think that it actually works.
It works on some people, but it's pretty easy to spot just a difference in tone on something like that. So whatever. They can do whatever they want to. I'm not worried about it.
I'm the least interesting vehicle on the highway usually. So, you know, I know they're not going to be looking at me.
I just try to do my thing and try not to be noticed and move on. That's definitely the best way to be.
We are. This or the slowest vehicle on the road, and you'll be fine.
Do you have your station where you can log into it from work or whatever and remote into it? Is that what you done yesterday?
Access everything from wherever I am.
Is this you're paying for, or is that something you just set up for where you could do it?
I pay like $4 a month for a VPS server up in Chicago that I use as a VPN server. And so all of my computers and my phones are into the internet through that VPN. And, you know, they can all talk to each other, you know, through the VPN. So I just use either a VNC client or TeamViewer or something like that. Usually the VNC client, because that's guaranteed to go over my VPN. And I can just, you know, log in remotely and use my PC at home like I'm sitting there.
That would be pretty cool. And you can do that from your phone also?
Yeah. TeamViewer, you don't even need the VPN because TeamViewer works without one. So, you know, if you want to do that, TeamViewer is free for personal use. So, you know, you can put it on your phone and computers, and then you can, you create an account and it registers all of your computers and devices, and then you can log into any of them from any of them whenever you want.
Might have to do a little checking into that and find out some more about it. Like I say, it'd be handy for this tool truck where I could log into my computer from my phone when I'm in a shop and look up something.
I have a screen, you know, I have four screens on my computer in the office, and one of them is always my home PC, so I can take care of personal stuff without having to use my work laptop and store my data on my work laptop.
I'm going to do that in a corporate setting, that's for sure. But Eric, I have arrived here this morning, and I've got to get this cold day started, so you be careful out there the rest of your trip, and good to talk to you this morning. KO4HKX, and I'll be clear on your final. 7-3.
I got like 3 or 4 miles to go to the office myself. So, yeah, have a great day, and we'll connect a little bit later on some of this digital stuff. Have fun. This is W2JKT. I'm clear.